Hello and welcome back to the Heart Song Yoga Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sarah. And this week we're back carrying on with our chakra series and we move into the realm of the sacral chakra or Svadhisthana. So a little discussion and exploration about what this region of consciousness relates to. And it's actually a place, it's known as my own abode or one's own place. So it's related to the element of water. It relates to the water element and everything relating to us, our relationship to ourselves, our relationship to others, which is huge. That's a huge region, contains a lot. So this center is often, you know, how calm are the waters feeling for you at the moment? It's always a good question to ask, because this is where we get that turmoil when we have relationship problems, or when we're ruminating over, you know, an argument, or it all comes back to our relations with others, which always then comes back to how's your relationship with yourself? Because that affects everything else that you do. And while you can't change others, you can change your relationship with yourself, which then ripples out a different frequency and changes the responses of others towards you quite often.
Yes, I mean, we see the entire world as a reflection of ourselves, really. Like, it's all viewed through that lens. So shifting or changing that lens changes everything.
It does.
Which is, you know, sort of evident when you look at other people and how we all respond so differently to different scenarios. It's like, I remember I was working in a theatre once and my brother was working in the same space, and he went to do this job with this other guy who was in the crew. And he's like, he came back and he's like, this guy, he was telling me all this stuff that's going on in his life right now. And I'm like, and he was just kind of bubbly and smiling about it. And my brother was like, how are you not stressed out of your mind right now? You've got all this drama going on, like serious, like survival level drama. And and the guy's just happy-go-lucky, kind of, you know, just sort of flowing around him.
Interesting. Yeah.
And my brother's perception was, wow, if that was happening to me, I would be so stressed. You know, it would be a completely different experience.
Yeah.
To the same stimulus. And the point is, you know, whether or not either of those responses are necessarily healthy, I think the man concerned might have been in some denial. The point is that you can have vastly different experiences with the same stimulus. So. And if that capacity exists between people, it also exists within you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes back to knowing yourself, and it comes back to that inward journey of how well do you know yourself, and how well do you witness what you do? Because we are firstly very reactive until we find, or we have practices that support us to develop the practice of being the witness and being able to take a step back and being more responsive in our reactions in the world, in our way of being in the world, so that we can look upon the situation and get a sense of it before we react and create that flurry. It's like, you know, upsetting the calm lake. It's like when you drop a pebble in the middle of a bowl of water, you know, those ripples just gently ripple out to the edge and create that stillness then from the center outward. So what can you do to create that inner stillness within you that then ripples from you in all your actions, thoughts, words, deeds? It's what we're here for. It's part of our journey, isn't it, to know ourselves, to keep working at that level so that we can be in the world in a steady abode, that our place of sacredness within is stable and secure, and that we have that inner knowing that all is well in here right now. And it's usually it's when we take our focus outwards and it's the external stimulus that usually ruffles it, isn't it? So it's how do you relate to yourself? How do you react? You know, how do you feel? Is it easy to be kind to yourself? You know, ask that question, because that's a big one for most people, that yeah. we can be kind to others. But how often are you kind to yourself? And can you practice self-kindness, self-compassion? Because it's one of the main lessons in life that you model those sort of aspects so that they become centered in you. So to have a centered, calm Swadhisthana, it's like you have to have that centered sense of holding that space for yourself in this region.
I think a really good way to explore this, and we can get into the yoga poses and things that work on it after, like at later, but something that I find is an excellent practice to not just be, because I find it's quite easy to, you know, okay, let's work on some yoga, and then in that moment on the mat, everything's great. But then can you carry that through into an environment where you might be triggered? And so a creative practice for me is really good for this, and I think it would be excellent for a lot of people. Most of us don't even embark on a creative practice because, well, who am I to be an artist? I was, you know, was not very good at drawing at school, kind of thing. or didn't get into the school music program, or didn't, you know, was not skilled at dance or singing or whatever it is. And I think going and embracing that process and then learning to give yourself some grace, especially when you're learning something new, or if you're doing an art practice and maybe you draw, maybe you doodle, maybe you knit, maybe you make misshapen socks, or you're doing pottery, or you, whatever it is that you're doing, it's something like creativity specifically is so intrinsic to expressing ourselves because it's coming from you. You're directing that entirely. And compared to, say, you know, like gardening, which is, yes, it's a creative expression of yourself, but also it's more of a relationship with the earth than you actually making, you're not growing the flower yourself, as in you're not crafting the petals, you know.
Yes.
But when you're drawing a flower, you are. And it's so easy to be so judgmental and look at it and go, oh, well, it's rubbish, you know, I'm not Picasso, am I? and no one is. So it's a really good practice to make yourself sort of look at how kind you are to yourself when you're making something and it doesn't work out, or it's harder than you expected, or, you know, your style is not perhaps what you thought it would be. Embrace that and be kind. I think a creative practice is a great way to do it.
It's a great learning tool, because I've always been attracted to art and creativity and colour. And then when I find myself in these things that I enroll for, like painting classes or creative outlets, I often in the past came away very, very frustrated. It was a real, looking back, it was a real mirror as to where I was in that center, because the sacral center is very much related to our creativity. And that all came back to my sense of self not being worthy.
Yeah.
That reflected in then, this isn't good enough. What I'm producing is not good enough. Why am I here? All those things you just mentioned, Kel. And it took me a long time to find peace with that and to be able to give myself permission to enjoy the process and not be outcome orientated. Yeah. So it's okay to play with color. Play with color. Put it on the page. It doesn't have to be anything. It doesn't have to be something that you can sell or something that you can put on the wall. It's a process. So, like, can you allow yourself to be immersed in this process of playing with color and lose yourself in it? And that's not easy, but I think starting a practice or going and following your heart, because I kept getting guided to these experiences, and quite often they weren't very nice. And I went with a friend. I talked my friend into going to this class, and she reluctantly came. And we're halfway through, and I'm really getting pretty grumpy by now because it's just not looking how I wanted it to look. And I'm sitting there. She said, oh, this is fun. I said, well, I'm ready to go. Are you ready? And she said, no, I'm not. I'm enjoying this. Just sit down and settle down, Sarah. Just keep going. Like, I was ready to get up and leave and just say, another one of those experiences. So it was a good reflection as to where I was. Whereas she didn't think she'd like it, and then she really got into it and felt it and absorbed it, and I was just expecting to produce something. I already had an expectation of this process, and it didn't meet it. So, yeah.
And I think, you know, so often when you're trying to meet those expectations, that's where it falls down, you know. That you can make art in any mood. So it's a great thing about it. You can be feeling miserable and you can make art, and you can be feeling great and you can make art, and both those outcomes will be completely different and probably both very real and anywhere in between. But you can't make great art under the weight of expectation. And the only, like, if you want to become a professional who takes commissions and then you have to produce a piece that is to a specification, well, that takes hours and hours of practice. And the process of that practice, and anyone could get there in their own style or way, is a process of being kind to yourself about the outcome you can do right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you might have a different, you sort of have to, so in, with the expectations, you just sort of have to adjust those. I could play a better saxophone solo 10 years ago than I can play now. Because I'm out of practice. If I applied myself again with kindness and grace and got through some of that and got my chops back and all of that, I could produce a better solo than I could do 10 years ago. You know, it's a flowing state. It's not static. It's not something that you do once and then it's done. It's a constant process of exploration. And I think that's sort of life, really.
It's life, and giving ourselves permission to be in that state, and that, and knowing that it will ebb and flow. And it's like, I think what yoga does over a period of time, yoga is very accumulative, and it builds an inner core strength and stability within you when you keep practicing it. And so over time, there's not usually any great major revelations after one or two classes, but over time you begin to notice, or what I notice from the feedback I get from participants in my classes, is that they say, I'm less reactive. I can take a step back. Whereas once I would have flown into a rage, I can now step back and just take a breath. So that's huge.
That's the power of it. And that's where it's like, yes, there's yoga, you know, you're doing something with your body while you're on the mat, but the real power is in what you take away from it, how you can apply that to the rest of your life. I suppose we should, before we run out of time, go into perhaps some yoga practices that are good for engaging with the sacral chakra.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you think about where this sits, it's around the sacral center, the hips, the belly, the inner thighs, knees, joints. So anything that moves those sorts of areas. So I like sitting forward bend. I also like the standing forward bend, the peace posture.
Peace posture is nice.
Yeah, they are very calming. And the head to knee pose, Janu Sirsasana, that's really nice too for calming and giving your digestive system a nice massage. That's quite nice. Lying on your back, hugging your knees to your chest, rocking your low back into the floor, pelvic rocking. You know, I find pelvic rocking nice. You don't have to go into a full bridge, but just really feeling into that deep lower back area.
Yeah.
Pelvic rocking. What do you find helps you?
No, it's not a big focus for me. It's probably, I find child pose quite good for both first and second chakras, really. Any kind of turbulence in your foundation or your sense of self and your relationship. So,
yeah.
And from a more kind of perhaps metaphorical sense, so much of how we relate to the world is rooted in our childhood experiences.
Yes, yeah.
So being able to put yourself back in that kind of space and settle that energy is important.
Yeah. So it's really personal.
Yeah, bridge is a good one. I like bridge.
Yeah.
A supported restorative bridge is nice.
It is nice.
And that's where you lie as if you're, so you prepare for the bridge, you're on your and have the prop you need within reach, and so get a block and then sit it just under your sacrum. So you lift up as if you're going to the bridge, and you put the block under your sacrum so that your tailbone is just hanging off the edge of it. Sounds uncomfortable, but you give it a try. It's really nice.
It is.
And that relaxes and releases that entire area of the lower back and the hips.
First and second chakra area. It is. And there's such a sense of being supported in that. I've been doing that recently in this series in the classes. And you allow yourself to be held. And there's something very nurturing about feeling held and supported. And if you can strengthen that with a positive affirmation once you come into that, and you let the block or the support underneath support you and affirm to yourself, life supports me. I'm supported in life. Life supports me. There's something hugely powerful in that, that really brings a stability to those first and second centers and brings in some peace and harmony. Because what you want to do in the second sacral center is bring in some peace and harmony and align it to that real sense of self. It's your sense of you.
Yeah.
One's own abode.
So I'll leave you to go and explore your sense of self in your yoga and possibly also a creative practice if you don't already. And explore it with kindness and compassion.
Yeah, that's the key. Time goes quick, doesn't it? There we are. Another talk done. There's always more to say.
We always do. We will see you next week with our continuing chakra journey. Thanks for listening.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.